Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is June 12th, 2015. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, graphic artist, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. Today we will be talking about workbook lesson 170, There Is No Cruelty in God and None in Me. This is the lesson scheduled for June 19th if you're doing one lesson a day and you started on January 1st. While you're listening today, please join us in the 12radio.com private group on Facebook. And if you're new today and you've never been there, welcome. But this is how you can get over there. You can go to 12radio.com to the website, and on the left side of the page, you'll see a column, and you'll see a link that says chat. Just go ahead and click that, and you'll be automatically redirected to our private group, and you can just ask to join the group. And that guy at the door ready to let you in is our producer, Scott Weaver. Scott, thank you for being here today. So let's get on and let's talk about all the good stuff about cruelty. That's what we're going to talk about today with Bruce. So welcome, Bruce. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks, CA. Thanks for having me on your show again. And I had to laugh of all the good stuff about cruelty because it's not a very popular topic, but I think it's one, like everything else in the course, that gives us an opportunity to look at what can really make us happy if we, you know, get the clouds of ego's imagination out of the way.
Yes. And that's it. And this lesson is particularly graphic, don't you think?
I mean,
that line about the idol and its lips are smeared with blood. Oh my, you know?
Yeah, it definitely has some sci-fi or maybe thriller genre overtones to it, doesn't it?
Well, it has some shock value.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I kind of like that because we so sugarcoat what we're doing. You know, the ego stuff, and I mean, not to just get totally judgmental about ourselves, but I think so often we do like to just kind of go into this, what I want to call la-la land, you know, or what was it, wasn't it Ken that used to call them bliss ninnies?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that whole idea. And, you know, but it really is pretty ugly when it gets right down to it. Our defenses, our fears, the idols that we choose over love, they're pretty ugly.
Yep.
And so why not do a little shock value here, you know, and just say, here, guys, it really is ugly. So let's quit putting our heads in the sand.
Yeah, exactly. There's another quote that is probably also one of the least popular quotes among course students is, what is not love is murder.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that basically is saying that anything that isn't perfect oneness, which is the truth of what we are, is essentially murder. It's basically wanting to destroy everything else in order to maintain its separate identity. And that's just insanity. But if we don't question it, we won't see the craziness of that thought system. And we'll you know, make the assumption that ego's one fundamental flaw, which is, you know, the belief that separation could happen, is valid. And then from there on, everything it seems to dictate is logical. And yet it's just totally nutso. I mean, but we have to look at it. And I think that's why, you know, Ken Wapnick is so, you know, gently but persistently insistent that one of the things we have to do is really ultimately the only thing really in, you know, all its various forms is just to look at the ego, see how crazy it is, not judge it, not condemn ourselves for having believed that we chose it. And then the more we do that, the more we're able to, you know, be less squeamish and just see it for what it is and just say, oh, that's just silly. It's not evil. It's not wicked. It's not simple. It's just silly. And then we can afford to be kind because we're no longer at the mercy of that incredibly crazy thought system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been really watching it this week. I think because I've read some things on Facebook, and it just seems like everywhere I turn, I've been hearing some things that what I would say is it's trying to promote the idea that there really is a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And that some people really are more evil than others, or some companies really are more evil than others. And, you know, of course, partially I said, CA, get off Facebook, quit reading this stuff. But, you know, somebody was going on and on and on about these evil companies, et cetera. And I thought, well, I do understand that. And I would never hold those companies up as being a model of ethical behavior. But on the other hand, at the root of it is these companies are trying to make money. And for all those people who were, you know, doing this black and white thing, I would have liked to have asked them, so what do you do to make money? You know, do you not do any marketing? And do you promote, you know, do you have a product that you ask people not to buy? Right. You know, and like I said, it's not that I think those companies are good, but I thought what's unfortunate is when, and I saw myself, that's the thing, I saw myself in that behavior mm-hmm. of wanting to draw the line and say, this is evil, I'm good.
Right.
You know, there is a difference, there is a hierarchy, and I'm higher and I'm better. And, you know, those people are evil and I can judge them and condemn them. But I thought, but you know what? It just ends up making you so unhappy.
Yeah.
And so as I watched it happening and just even watching my responses, I was reading these things. I just thought, whoa, that's exactly how I get into that so much. There is a hierarchy and I can elevate myself by convincing you that I'm not part of those companies. I don't do that kind of thing.
You know?
Yeah, not me. And yet, like I said, you know, and I even kind of thought, but if you look inside those companies, and once again, I'm not holding them up as role models, but, you know, probably 95% of the people that work for those companies are just trying to pay a mortgage and feed their kids.
Exactly.
That's what they're trying to do. They're,
yeah.
you know, they're your mother-in-law, your brother-in-law, your friends, and your cousins, etc. And, you know, as long as we can't identify what we have in common with other people, then we are always going to set up those black and white issues. So when you had suggested this lesson and I read it, I thought, ah, this is a really good one. You know, this is a really good one.
It is. It is. And before we move on, I just had a couple of thoughts that crossed my mind as you were talking. You know, when you mentioned, you know, companies, and I was thinking, well, gee, for almost 20 years, I worked for a company in Northern California. It was part of the television industry. And I used to watch what was on TV and I'm thinking, gosh, I'm a part of this. and I'm contributing to this, you know, demise of our culture, you know, and watching, just flipping through the dial, you know, or dating myself, you know, through the channels and seeing all the chaff, you know, with
right.
a few grains of wheat out there. But again, that's that whole hierarchy of judging and condemning and basically the cruelty of the hierarchy and making orders of difficulty important and orders of differences important. And anything that has to do with duality is cruelty ultimately. But our egos don't want to look at that because we want to hold out a little place that's innocent for us or maybe we want to be guilty and project the innocent back on someone else so that we feel that, you know, we're victimized by the innocent. You know, either mm-hmm. way is a win-lose, which is ultimately a lose-lose in
right.
non-duality.
Right.
The other quote that crossed my mind is a favorite one where I think George Orwell correctly discerned the slippery slope of duality, even though maybe he wasn't thinking in those terms. But in Animal Farm, his classic book, he has a statement that stuck with me. It says, all animals are equal. And then pretty soon the pigs who are starting to take over scrawled a little addendum to it that says, but some animals are more equal than others.
Right.
You know, that was kind of like the the little foot in the door that basically pried open, you know, the ego's crypt of sinister monster thoughts that suggest that there could possibly be differences between any of us. And
mm-hmm.
And that's where the cruelty comes from.
Right. Well, and I'm going to bring in a little astrology here
okay.
too, which I usually don't do on this show, but of course I can't quite help it. It is a frame of reference for me. And one of the things that's going on is Venus, the planet of love and values, just recently moved into Leo. And Leo is a wonderful sign. I mean, it's fire, it's inspiration, it's playfulness, but it's also, I think, very aligned, I'd say, with ego and that ego of the hierarchy of some of us are more equal than others because it's the sign of the king or the queen.
Royalty,
and I'll tell you, even in the last week, I don't know, you know, maybe it's because of my chart, I'm really sensing it, but even in this last week, I feel like that is so, it's just rampant right now. And either in my life or what I'm seeing. And I thought, boy, this is going to be an interesting summer because we're all questioning our values. But a lot of that is going to go to where does my self-confidence come from? Where does my self-esteem come from? Does it come from how I wear my hair, what my body looks like, whether or not people give me approval? And so on some levels, I think it's spiritually, it's going to be very, very interesting because we're all going to do this. I shouldn't say come to Jesus meeting, but maybe that's it. You know, just having some real, I think, insights and some real struggles about who we are and what makes us lovable or what makes us not lovable. And do we love ourselves? And if we do, why? And all of this. And just what do we deserve? You know, because already what I'm sensing is this kind of thing of, well, I don't want to stand in line. I'm better than that. You know, I should just be at the front of the line, or why should I have to sit in this traffic? And I'm like, oh boy, CA, where's this stuff coming from? So I'm going to blame it on Venus and Leo, but we'll see about that. But in any case, I think it's an interesting thing, and it just kind of goes right back to, do I really believe that some people are more equal than others, that some deserve to be elevated? And if I do, why do I believe that? You know, and just, so all that hierarchy stuff has just been really playing out in my life this week.
Interesting. Yeah, I've dabbled with astrology over the years off and on, and to me it's always fascinating to look at how each zodiacal sign really can be looked at as, like anything else, a symbolic representation of the thought system of inclusion, when utilized properly, or you know, an ally of the ego to further divide and make separate and different, and make the distinction important rather than the intrinsic oneness. And just any system like that can be used to bring together or to destroy. It can be used for kindness or cruelty.
That's right. Well, and especially the planet Venus, because it goes to our values. Mm-hmm. What's really important? What do we really value in life? So, like I said, I think it's going to be a wonderful summer. I think it's going to be really fun to be exploring some of these things.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's get on with this lesson. And thank you once again for suggesting it, because, of course, your timing is impeccable.
Well, I just thought it would be interesting to have one that would be, you know, around the time that people who are doing the workbook lessons sequentially from the beginning of the year, which I started doing again, and I'm amazed, as always, how much it was rewritten and added it to that while I wasn't looking.
Yeah, isn't that the truth, Bruce?
Uh-huh. I mean, it just starts off, you know, that no one attacks without intent to hurt. This can have no exception. When you think that you attack in self-defense, you mean that to be cruel is protection. You are safe because of cruelty, which is, I mean, this is just another expose of the insanity of the ego. But it just festers and continues to work on an unconscious level if we don't look at the feedback that we get in our life and use that as a forgiveness classroom and see how incredibly crazy our projections are and how they come back to us. You know, like you say, in our values, the things that we think are important, and some are more important than others. And you know, we make all these defenses against things that we don't like and try to encourage things that we do like to have happen, or, you know, fill our dream scenarios and our holographic stages because we think that somehow that's going to make us happy.
Right. Yeah. Well, and going along in that same paragraph, it says, you mean that you believe to hurt another brings you freedom. And there again, right off the top on this lesson, he's just kind of hitting us right between the eyes of, you know, I take it back to, when do we ever think on this planet, like if we're baking a cake, do we really think we can put in spoiled ingredients and sour things and that kind of thing, and all of a sudden have a sweet cake? No, we don't believe that. So why do we believe that we can attack another person and that that is the right response in order to bring ourselves freedom, to bring or to find love, or to just feel safe and secure? How would that ever make us safe and secure? Why do we believe that?
And yet any it's crazy, isn't it? And yet anything that we do that involves dividing and keeping separate, no matter how seemingly innocuous, ultimately is an expression of cruelty. If what the Course is saying is true, which, I mean, the more you look at it, the more you realize, well, yeah, it's got to be. Because it's really the intention. It's not, obviously, it's never the form. It's never the behavior. Because, you know, just shutting your door or you know, whatever, you know, drawing the blinds, you know, it's like that seems to be blocking light out or whatever. But if we think in terms of why do we do anything that we do, why do we include people or not include people in various conversations or whatever, but it's really, I think, what Ken says, it's not what we can't invite 7 billion people to a potluck every time we have a potluck, but we can in our minds not intentionally exclude anyone from the feeling of goodwill and caring and appreciation that we have and equality. Speaking of an Aquarian ideal,
right?
You know, that sort of the positive side of one of those archetypes is recognizing that everything in truth really is the same, and we can afford to give everyone the same respect and consideration and kindness that really undoes that ego craziness of defending and separating and making special.
Well, and that's a great point, because it's not so much about inclusion. It's about make an effort not to exclude.
I love
that point.
Exactly. And exclusion really is a declaration of war. So any time that we exclude or try to make separate or different, we're saying, I'm doing battle with the other. And we may not say it explicitly, but that's really, in essence, what the orders of difficulty idea really implies, is that whenever we've made a distinction that goes to where in the mind that we think the differences are important, we're basically trying to create or maintain a warlike state in our minds, and it just doesn't work.
Right, it doesn't.
but we think it does. We keep going back to that used car salesman and buying lemons, you know, and say, oh, well, let's just defend against this next time and instead of that, you know, we'll change our alliances and you know, change our enemies. And I was thinking earlier today after I reread this lesson again about when the Berlin Wall came down. It was kind of interesting, you know, some of the astute political observers noticed that what happened in this country and probably elsewhere in the world, it's happened countless times, is that the emphasis shifted from external foes to internal foes. And there was, I don't know if you remember that era, not much, but the political climate seemed to shift more toward, you know, who are our internal enemies that we need to be, you know, look out. Sort of a new McCarthy era kind of mentality.
Uh-huh.
And so it's really, you know, as long as there's somebody out there, as long as there's a scapegoat, as long as there's an other that we can foist our unconscious guilt onto, then we have a need for defense.
Right. Because then
there's something to defend. And
you know, that's a really good observation. Do you remember what year the Berlin Wall came down?
I'd have to Google it, but I think it was in the around the mid-80s, something like that.
I'm just guessing.
A quick Google check would
would take
care of it, but I won't take the time to do that right now.
Well, yeah, I was just kind of wondering, and I never thought about that, but you know, it is true. In fact, you know, this may be a cynical thing to say too, but I've often thought when it comes to disease processes, you know, we seem to go, and maybe this is because I have a background in healthcare, but you know, in the 50s it was polio, and you know, as soon as we eradicated polio, then we went to something else, and we seem to need to have some horrible disease.
Right.
And if we get rid of one, then we come up with another one. You know, it's as if we just can't be without something. And that's a sad thing to say, and maybe it is cynical, but it kind of goes back to the same thing. As long as we need that, as long as we need that separation, as long as we need to have fear in our lives, then we will find ways to manifest it. So if one external enemy goes, we'll come up with another one.
Yeah, and our egos are cynical, but that's but they don't want to admit that, right?
Right.
And yeah, and the whole disease being substituted by another new one kind of reminds me of there was a list before email was in was happening in the office I worked in a few decades ago. There was a Xerox list of Murphy's Laws and all the sub-laws that went around the office. And, the famous Murphy's Laws, if anything can go wrong, it will, which of course is the just a translation of ego's maxim of seek but do not find. One of the sub-laws that I thought was kind of humorous was inside every little problem is a larger problem struggling to get out. And then my favorite, of course, is to me, the Zen koan of that list. If anybody ever saw that similar list, anyway, it was called Garth's Distinction, which I thought was a really beautiful statement about the difference between non-duality and duality. And it went, there are two types of people in the world: those who divide people into two types and those who don't.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And I'm not sure what that had to do with Murphy's Law, but it was on the list, and that was always my favorite.
I do remember
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Well, I was noticing just a whole bunch of stuff of in this lesson about like the italicized quote that says, "You make what you defend against, and by your own defense against it, is it real and inescapable?" And isn't that amazing? All the different ways that we try to make our issues and our problems real to defend them, and to make sure they stay with us. And then it says, lay down your arms, and only then do you perceive it false. So we have to look above the battleground in order to, to above the ego's battleground of duality, in order to see that there really is another way. There's a better way to look at things, which doesn't involve a we they paradigm, huh?
Well, and I want to read the sentence right above the one that you just read
Okay.
because it says, "Today we learn a lesson which can save you more delay and needless misery than you can possibly imagine." And then it goes on to say, "You make what you defend against."
Yeah.
And that line itself is worth buying the whole Course in Miracles for.
Yeah,
You
yeah.
know, you make what you defend against. And isn't that the truth?
It is.
And we see it on an individual level, we see it on a country level. We become the aggressors because somebody else is going to be aggressive.
And as long as we believe that ideas can leave their source, and that there's can be an out there, which is contrary to what physicist John Wheeler said, that there's no out there out there, which is pretty interesting to ponder. Then we can conveniently overlook the truth that, as the Course says, the secret of salvation is but this, that you're doing it to yourself, which basically just restates what you just said there in that first quoted sentence there. We make what we defend against.
Well, and I'm kind of reminded, and I guess I'm kind of going political or regional or a country here, but I remember years ago I was talking about one of the wars and how we had been looking for those weapons of mass destruction and didn't find them. And
Right.
I had made the comment, I said, I just can't help but feel kind of weird about the fact that we're the country that has the weapons of mass destruction. And for the most part, we manufacture most of them.
Of course.
And somebody that I was talking to said, "Well, but we're us." I said, "Anne?" And she goes, "Well, I mean, we should have them. We're us. We're the United States." And I said, "Well, and what is that exactly does that mean?" But I knew I should not push the conversation any further the minute she said, "Well, we're us," because
Right.
that was reason enough that we could have weapons of mass destruction, or that we could be the manufacturer of, biotoxins or whatever we did, because we're us. And once again, we were different. We were separated. We were special.
Right. As long as there's an outside enemy, then we can ignore Walt Kelly's Pogo's famous quote, which I'm going to paraphrase, is, we have met the enemy and they is us. Because how else could there be any, it's just, and I like the metaphor of shooting yourself in the foot too, because if we recognize that we're all one being, we're all one awareness, then anytime we condemn, crucify, judge, belittle, berate, in any way, make less of or even different than, we're setting ourselves up for, you know, either a special love or a special hate saga that can only end in disappointment at best, you know, and it's just crazy, but we all do it. And the trick, I think, is to, you know, when you catch yourself starting to go down the road, just a little mindful, bing, and say, oh, there I started to go again. And just, you know, just watch for the momentum to just sort of fizzle out when you recognize this isn't getting me anywhere. This used car salesman is trying to sell me another lemon. My inner cruelty teacher is basically, you know, up to no good again, and I'm not going to go there. but do it in a gentle, kind way, which is to say, you know, if you're in mid-sentence, you know, maybe you might want to stop and change the end of the sentence, but at least, you know, notice it and begin to not condemn yourself when you catch yourself taking sides in your heart, so to speak. Because I think we can certainly look at the differences on the level of form and not deny that there's differences. That'd be silly.
Right.
But I think it's when we make big deals out of the differences is when, you know, we're defending, and as we know from the course, you know, defenses do what they would defend against. So,
well, and I love all the places in the course, and this is one of them, where it says something equivalent to just lay down your arms.
Yeah.
And in this one, it says lay down your arms, and only then will you perceive it false.
Exactly.
And I think I like that because, you know, maybe it kind of goes back to you. If you ever do yoga or some of those kinds of relaxation exercises, you know, one of the things they'll have you do is like maybe squeeze, you know, your body really tight, and then you let it go.
Right.
And most of the time, I have no idea how I'm bringing my shoulders up to my ears and how tense I really am until I'm forced to look at it. Mm-hmm. And so every time I see one of those places, that's what it feels like to me. Like, do you realize you're carrying your machine gun around and you're carrying all these heavy defenses? And do you have any idea how tiring this is?
Oh, yeah.
And so when I read those and it just says, lay down your arms, lay down your defenses. And all of a sudden I'm going, yeah, this is a heavy load. And I forgot I was even carrying it.
It's a relief when we, you know, put ourselves above the battleground. I'm reminded of a dream that I had years ago. There was a recurring one. And if I've mentioned this before, please forgive.
I'm sure it'll be quite interesting the second time around. So
I had this recurring dream when my adolescence and into my 20s, I think, where I was chased by this dark hooded figure with a saber, you know, and it was just an awful, horrifying dream. And it's like, no, I don't want to have this anymore. And finally, I, you know, after many episodes of this, I realized, wait a minute, I had this sort of lucid moment. It's like, wait a minute, this is my dream. This is not somebody else's dream. This is my dream. And I turned around, faced my, you know, still masked assailant, grabbed the saber, sword, whatever, out of his hand, snapped it over my knee into two pieces, stomped on it, said, don't do this again. And it was like, oh, that works. This is my dream. You know, but I think at that moment, I probably didn't interpret it at the time that way, but it was more like a realization. I really do have a choice as to whether or not I want to interpret all the things in my life as being fearful or not. And I can choose that. I can disarm that part of my mind that really has run amok and become this monster by just turning around, facing it and looking at it and seeing that there's nothing there. And then after that, the dream never happened again.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. But I think we can do that symbolically and metaphorically. Every time we, like you say, disarm ourselves and just say, oh, this epithet or insult I was going to hurl, or this snide remark or snarky comment or whatever, if I can just, you know, stop myself, not just from saying it, but from thinking and feeling and recognizing that the ego is going to keep on doing that. That's its only one track, you know, it's its only genre that it knows. But we can switch who we're listening to. We can, you know, we can turn down the volume on that insanity and say, oh yeah, that soundtrack is really the default that I came here with, but I could choose this kindness teacher that says, I don't have to defend against anything because there's nothing outside of me to defend.
Well, and along those lines, you know, in this lesson, it's talking about basically the idol of cruelty. And when we choose, you know, the inner cruel teacher, it says, and gods demand that those who worship them obey their dictates and refuse to question them. And see, once again, it's not only carrying around the arms, but it's just carrying around that kind of a thing too, of just letting that inner god of cruelty just push us around and demand things of us. And why don't we ever just stand up and go, you know what? I don't have to listen to you. And just like in your dream, saying, don't ever do this to me again. You know, go away. I can choose something else. But they depend on, or the ego depends on the fact that we forget that we've got a choice. You know, as Ken says, it's the ace in the sleeve or the ace in the hole, that we will never turn around and just say that, you know, question them. This isn't okay anymore.
And then the rest of that paragraph concludes with, harsh punishment is meted out relentlessly to those who ask if the demands are sensible or even sane. You know, when we're not looking at it, we don't even question it. It is their enemies who are unreasonable and sane, while they are always merciful and just. So we not only do deny it, but we distort everything and turn it inside out and upside down. We basically then, when we side with ego's implicit acknowledgement that defenses are needed, not on the level of form, but in our mind, then we can, justify anything. We can, it's the slippery slope that keeps us forever having to, push Sisyphus's rock up the hill because there's this, it's going to come crashing down on us, kind of thing. Instead of realizing this whole thing is a massive dream, and I can afford from that perspective above the battleground, above the defensible space that I think I need in this world, to look at it with kindness and say, oh, we're all fighting the same hard battle, and being cruel doesn't win anything for anyone, including the apparent victor.
Well, and in this lesson too, a little bit farther on, still once again, just talking about when we make cruelty the one we're following, it just says, you don't need to defy his power because he has none. And I love that too, because there again, we get confused. You know, we just get confused and think that there is no win, you know, there's no way out, that how can we ever stop this? And all we have to do is just simply stop and choose the inner kindness teacher. Choose kindness. Because that God does not have any power.
Bingo, bingo. It's an idle dream. And it's IDOL and IDLE. It's a kind of a nice pun that really works both ways, because it's IDLE, idle, in it, that it does nothing, and it's IDOL, and it's basically, like it says here, it's made of stone. It really has no power. It's a dream figure that we have given all kinds of, ascribed all kinds of, magical capabilities to, but we're watching the screen. This is pixels moving by. This is high a theater, special effects, house galore, extravaganza that we're watching, and but we forget that, don't we?
We forget it's a dream.
Yeah.
Or like I like to say, when I was young, sometimes I'd get really caught up in a movie and it would really upset me and I'd cry, and my mom would always say, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. And sometimes in my head still, I can hear her say that. And so I say it to myself now, especially when it comes to, you know, the illusion of what we think life is. And I go, CA, it's just a movie.
It is.
It's
It is.
just a movie. Even
And
though it
that,
can be hurtful, right?
well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it's certainly recognizing that it's a dream doesn't absolve us from anything that would help mitigate and minimize the misery and suffering in the world. In fact, if anything, it mobilizes us and frees us up, because we're not limited by the very narrow range of choices that the ego presents us with its interpretations. We can, if we let go of thinking that we know what's best for a given situation, then we suddenly have, a cosmic realm of choices that are available to us that we wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny. I just said that to somebody the other day. We were talking about something, and I said, no matter how forcefully I speak, the truth is, I don't really know what the best thing is for anybody. I don't even know what the best thing is for me. And if only I could get that through my head, you know, but that's a hard lesson to learn. And yet I think the course does continually tell us that you don't know what is even the best thing for yourself. Because if you did, you wouldn't be worshiping the cruelty god.
Right, right. Yeah, I like where it, you know, it's sort of like the ultimately kind-hearted version of our inner Don Rickles that's lampooning us, you know, and making fun of our investment in the ego. When you spoke of values earlier, it's just like, you know, so how's that working out for you? How's that, you know, if we can resign as our own teacher and realize that, you know, that inner used car salesman has just been consistently selling us lemons, but every time getting out the Men in Black neuralizer, and you know, I forgot already that every single time before it led me astray, but gee, now I have this fresh new idea that this next assault or this next conquest in the world is gonna do it for me, but I just have to compromise being kind to, you know, these certain people. I'll be kind to my favorites, but I'll just select out a handful that I'll still keep as my enemies, even if I don't want to look at that, you know.
That's right. And
yeah.
I love that line about resigning as your teacher, because, you know, I think it's actually in the manual for teachers, but especially the line that says, because you've been
badly
taught.
Taught.
I love that. I mean,
exactly.
Every time I see that, it just makes me laugh.
It is. And hopefully, yeah, that's really, I think, the design outcome of that phrase is to remind us, it's like, it's laughable. If we just look at what we've tried to accomplish in this world and what's ended up happening, the only real success has been when we've been mindful enough to be kind and to see our own strategies as incredibly flawed and you know, blind and guideless and crazy, and just say, you know, throw up our hands and say, okay, there's got to be a better way, like Helen and Bill did, and just okay, so what's left over? Well, hey, we could actually try not attacking and not judging, and if that's the momentum is still strong there, which I think it really is, if we're honest for everyone, we can just look at that and say, oh, there I was, you know, making it a condemnation of this value system or this ism or this culture or this country or this group of people, you know, whatever the demographic, you know, and just catch ourselves and say, oh yeah, that doesn't get me anywhere.
No.
That's basically throwing the baby out with the bathwater, you know, and the baby is the that is real, that we can nurture to adulthood is the idea that we're all one being, you know, and we just seem to be taking separate forms, and it's that those separate forms that keep us enslaved and keep us fighting these battles that these, you know, evil warlords that seem to be outside of us.
Those evil companies.
Yeah, those evil whatever, fill in
if
the
it,
blank.
If it just weren't for those evil countries and those evil companies, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The multinational thought systems that I project out and call companies.
Yes.
For example. Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy. Well, I'm so glad we can laugh about it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, I think that's such a helpful perspective too, is when we can gently laugh at the craziness of just by default following ego's shenanigans and nonsense and thinking that that's going to get us somewhere. And it doesn't mean that we stop going to work or brushing your teeth or you know, paying your taxes or, you know, whatever, you know, things that normal people do every day and different times of the year and whatever. And but just to look at that and say, why am I doing this? Am I doing this out of a call to vengeance or a call to somehow maintain my victimizer status, regardless of what side of the fence you think you might be on at any given moment? Or is this something that I can use to undo that dichotomy and say, oh yeah, My interests are the same as the person I live with, or the people that I work with, or the people that check out me at the grocery store, or at the, you know, wherever I do different kinds of business, you know, or, you know, yada, yada, on and on and on. It really, the list is endless, because if modern physics is right, like, you know, that quote again from John Wheeler is like, if there's no out there, then anytime I'm cruel to seeming other, I'm being cruel to myself. And it's, if it's going through my mind, then it's affecting me, regardless of whether or not the other person is tuning into it, or at least consciously.
Right. Well, and that's it. Even if you believe that you know, that you're being cruel to that other person and it's justified, even if you believe there is an out there, mm-hmm. think about what it feels like to be cruel.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter whether or not it's justified. Think what it feels like to be cruel. And think about, once again, it kind of goes back to carrying all those weapons.
Right.
What does it take? What is the cost to us to carry all those weapons all the time?
Oh, yeah. It's a heavy burden.
It's a heavy burden.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we internally did an analysis and an inventory of what we carry around, and by lucidly looking and, you know, mindfully taking stock of all the defenses that we have, and all the excuses and alibis and justifications for the things that we do, it would be like, the most heavily armed comic book hero imaginable.
Yes.
would not hold a candle to our arsenal,
right?
You know, hanging from our belt, you know, by our side, whatever. Because that's really how the ego mind works. It's just this rampaging, out of control elephant in the room, invisible golem, you know, on steroids, monster that basically, as long as it's invisible, it can continue to devour the helpless victims that wander into its subterranean vault and gloat and glee with you know, that each victory and the cruel craziness and with which it you know, tortures and then you know, devours its victims, kind of thing. But that's you know, kind of the graphic language of this workbook lesson. But that's really, you know, the insane belief in the gods of vengeance. You know, that comes from confusing love with fear and thinking that somehow fear could possibly give us anything, and mm-hmm. that there's some benefit or some payoff out of it. Other than it makes the separate self that we think we are real. And that's, of course, the deeper question that we really don't want to look at.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I just sort of had an aha moment sitting here, because you made the comment, you know, going back to why do we keep thinking it's going to work? Why do we keep thinking it's going to work on some level? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what I flashed on, and maybe because she's laying here, I have a husky.
Uh-huh.
And I've had her for 4 years, and she was actually 5 when I got her. But when we go for a walk every day, I make her sit in front of the door before I'll let her out.
Uh-huh.
But every single day, she stands at the door obstinately, and we just have to stand there until she'll sit down. And I can't believe it, because it's like we go through this every single day. You know, I'm not going to open the door until you sit down. So you can either sit down right away, or, I mean, sometimes it's 2 or 3 minutes, which, as you can imagine, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I've decided, you know, that's the only way. I mean, she obviously thinks that this day is going to be different. Right? This day is, but you know, and
it's a great metaphor.
And it's great. It's funny too, because the other dog stands there. And if dogs can roll their eyes, that's what the other dog is doing. Like, really? Do we have to do this every single day? Because the other dog, of course, goes to the door with her leash and just sits down, you know? And it's like, but it all of a sudden occurred to me that I can use that situation with Ivy. As when I see her do that, then I can ask myself, why do you keep thinking that your way is going to work?
That's
Why
a
do you
good
keep thinking
question.
that? So now, I like I said, it feels like an aha thing. And I'm going to kind of just start reinterpreting when she does that. I'm going to see that as my inner teacher going, and when do you do that? How often do you do that? You keep thinking you can do it your way, just like she does.
That's a great metaphor, and also a perfect example of how we can use what seems to be outside of ourselves as a reminder to be more mindfully aware of when we're balking at the mind training that the course requires and gently suggests that we might want to consider as, you know, of all the many causes of your suffering, you know, your guilt was not among them. And
That's
oh
right.
yeah, oh that's right. My ability to actually look at my mind and choose a different teacher. Oh yeah. Oh well, I guess maybe I could try maybe just a little now and then here. You're choosing a different teacher that says I can be kind instead of cruel as an approach to life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, and I just had another aha moment. You know what? We ought to think about putting together some kind of a little card set that is kind of the best hits of the Course in Miracles, but the funny ones.
That sounds
You
good.
know, the funny
Yeah,
ones.
I
Because
like that.
all those, I mean, they're hysterical, you know, of all the causes of your grief, you never considered what you're doing as part of it.
Really?
You
Well,
know?
like, duh.
And that thing about being badly taught. Let's do it, Bruce. Let's do
I think
it. You know, the
I like
greatest
it.
hits, the
I like
greatest
it.
laughs in the Course in Miracles. What
Well,
do you
last
think?
year, that sounds great. And I was going to say it could be a sequel to what I did last year, which was a calendar that had a dozen of the what I thought were pretty heavy hitting quotes from the course that I called it a calendar for recovering bliss ninnies. And so I put that out last year, and this could be a perfect sequel, and it could also be a card deck or you know, any other good mnemonic device. But yeah, there's some really funny ones in there. And I think that's such a good reminder too, that this really is a course in not taking craziness seriously and seeing the humor in our individual separate approaches. And how it's just it's comic. It's funnier than any comedy we've ever seen, you know, if we step back above the battleground of our own defenses and our own striving to try to strike down our enemies and our the problems and the challenges that seem to face us by, you know, lashing out against them in various ways. And any time that we, you know, use the belief in differences as an approach, then that's just what we're doing, you know, no matter how carefully disguised it might be with special effects, it's still the same thing, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I would have loved to have seen your calendar. Now, when you say you put it out, was it electronic? Was it physical? What was it?
I put it on ACIM blog, as a thing people could go in order and that sort of thing. And I'll put it out again next year too. But I like the idea of making the ACIM funnies. I think there's
really, I think it's a great idea, Bruce.
Yeah.
I think we ought to think about it together.
Sure.
I
Let's
mean,
do it.
You know, just like right in this moment, we came up with this great idea.
That's a great one. That's a great one.
I mean, I'm serious. We can talk about it. You think about it, but you know, and I think about you because you always make me laugh a lot when we're talking about the course.
Well,
so
I'm glad,
I just think it would be a natural for us to put our heads together and think about that.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So I want you to think about it.
Oh, I will. I will. I will.
All right. And I realize we are getting close to our time. So what announcements do you have today, Bruce? And just thank you so much for this lesson. It was great.
Oh, my pleasure. And like I said, I think the main thing is just to, whenever you get into one of these, you know, heavy duty lessons in the course, just to remember that it's basically a way of looking at what seems to be our bigger monsters and seeing that, like the last few paragraphs of it suggest, is, you know, now our eyes do belong to Christ, and the call for God is heard and answered. You know, now has fear made way for love, and God himself replaces cruelty. Because that's really what's behind it. That's the awareness that's the unchanging peace that we want to continue to remember is beyond our special loves and our special hates, beyond all of our condemnations and judgments and so forth. So anyway, as far as announcements, as always, I'm reachable through acimblog.com, and I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page with the same name. And what else? I get on with different people on online media, such as a study group that I do from here on Wednesday nights and get together locally. And also one quick announcement for people in the Denver area that might be tuning into this on the live recording. Doug Sparks, who is a wonderful course teacher, will be at the Rocky Mount Miracle Center on Sunday, both at the 11 o'clock morning Sunday gathering, as well as an afternoon workshop. And he's always wonderful. So I can't say enough good things about Doug's work.
Oh, yes, I agree. And thanks for reminding me of that. I did see the notice that he's there.
Yeah, I'll and if be I can,
if I can, yeah, and if I can find that notice, I will actually put it in the chat room. So okay. People, but yeah, that's the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center, which is in Denver, Colorado, in sort of, I guess, South Denver, you might say. It's off of Colorado Boulevard in Bucktel.
Yep.
And he's going to be doing the 11 o'clock service and then a workshop in the afternoon.
Exactly.
Okay, great. And you're going to be there?
I will. And actually, since this is something I do as a livelihood, I'm actually helping the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center with a new website. So their old one is miraclescenter.org. But the new one, which is almost ready for prime time, which we haven't really officially announced yet, is rockymountainmiraclescenter.org. So you can go to either one of those places and see the announcement about Doug and all the other great things that are happening there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. That's great. And yeah, I look forward to the book we're writing together.
Sounds good. Actually, that's another one of my back burner things that I want to move to front burner. So a good reminder.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you so much. And maybe I'll see you on Sunday. But if I don't, I will talk to you soon.
That sounds great. Thanks.
Okay. Again. Thanks a lot. And thanks to all of you who are listening today. And thanks for those of you who are participating in the chat room as well. And this is Friday, June 12th. So that announcement about Doug Sparks being at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center on Sunday is for Sunday, the 14th of June. I want to also thank my producer, Scott Weaver, for being here today. And remind you, you can find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, where we discuss one of my favorite illusions in this dream world, astrology. I'm live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 Eastern. You can also find me every Thursday evening teaching astrology basics on 12academy.com, so I would encourage you to check that out. You can also find me on 12listen.com for private readings and consultations. Today, June 12th, we're having a big sale all day to celebrate the 12th of the month. Come find me. I'll be there right after the show. You have about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea or get a little snack or something before our next live show, The Through Line with Christine Dumaurier, coming up next on Fabulous Fridays. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.